Hey Houston, Conn's prices are invincible. That means prices have been cut low, as in amazingly low, as in won't be beat. In fact, we're backing it up with our low price guarantee. Invincible prices on appliances, furniture, electronics, mattresses, and more. Not invincible enough for you? How about free next day delivery on appliances, TVs, and mattresses? And payment options for everyone, whether you have good credit or building it. Visit Conn's today and find out what invincible feels like.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger. Because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome, welcome to a Wednesday edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. I'm Marcus Papp, joined as always by Reggie Rizzou. On today's episode, one Colorado school district says its electric school bus has proven superior to its diesel counterparts. We'll tell you why. This week's Weird Wednesday includes an odd rescue, an unusual theft, a Big Mac record, and bunny tattoos. Reggie will bring you the details there. And on this day in history, the circus inspires a common backyard product for kids. Coming up, it's Cool Stuff. Well, the push towards a society with more electric than gas-powered vehicles doesn't come without its fair share of challenges, not the least of which is the overall demand for electricity as more and more people make the switch. The U.S. Department of Energy has predicted a 38% increase in electricity consumption by the year 2050, that's 2050, primarily due to EVs. And the generation of that electricity obviously has to come from somewhere. Still, most would acknowledge it's worth the trouble if it helps mitigate the negative effects on the environment. But aside from the environmental impact, there are other reasons to consider making that change. New evidence from the West Grand School District in Kremlin, Colorado, suggests their lone electric bus outperforms its diesel-powered counterparts, both in running costs and reliability, during their frigid winter temperatures, which at times can dip as low as negative 30 degrees Fahrenheit in the morning. Per 9 News Denver, Kremlin, Colorado is one of the coldest places in the state, and the school district that encompasses this small town of 1,500 people began using an electric bus back in 2020. Per EPA Representative Casey Becker, quote, "What we are seeing is that these buses are doing great in cold weather. They still maintain a battery charge even when it's cold," end quote. EV skeptics often cite the reduced capability of a battery pack when exposed to extreme temperatures, but the evidence in this case is to the contrary. And now, thanks to a grant from the Environmental Protection Agency and the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, two more electric buses are coming to Kremlin. Becker notes there will now be a total of 49 electric school buses heading to 9 Colorado school districts. Said West Grand County School District Director of Transportation Bethany Oren, quote, "It," meaning the electric bus, "averages 26 cents per mile, and the diesel buses, just for fuel, not including oil changes, filters, lubes, is 58 cents per mile," end quote.
While I like the idea of the environmental side of the electric vehicle, I do have to wonder, you say 26 cents per mile versus 58 cents for the buses that use fuel. What about when it comes to repairs? Now, maybe the repairs won't be as often as the EV, but if you do have to go in and do repairs, what are those costs versus repairs for the typical engine that they're using now? I mean, again, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here, just out of curiosity.
Yeah, something to consider. I don't know the answer to that. We could obviously look into it and bring you what we find out on an upcoming episode. But in terms of just overall cost to run the bus, right now, the electric vehicle is outpacing the diesel counterpart. And as a result, they're bringing more of them to the school district because they're performing in these extremely cold temperatures, which I know you know all too well, Reggie.
I do. And my main problem with this is, how will I know when the bus is coming? Right now, I can hear that bus coming down the street, that electric one. How am I supposed to know when it's coming? I guess there is the one advantage. I'm sure the brakes are going to be the same, which always squeal. I don't know if you know this about school buses, but those brakes seem like they're always squealing. It's so annoying.
Well, been a long time since I myself have boarded a school bus, thank God. And I think anybody who's ever ridden one can't wait for the day that they get their driver's license or have some form of an alternative ride to partake in, because whether it's electric or fueled by actual gasoline, diesel, what have you, it's not the greatest ride in the world. And as a germaphobe myself, sitting around that many kids, even when I was a kid myself, not the best experience.
Maybe that is something I should consider, because the kids keep asking me to pick them up and drop them off from school, which is literally about a mile away from my house. I still make them ride the bus just because I want them to experience that whole bus adventure.
I get it. You're going to grow to appreciate when you have another ride then down the road. And frankly, if your kids are only a mile from school, at some point they might be old enough to just bike in.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the street to get a little bit safer for them to put something in there to bike. But then I said, if that happens, we can all just ride our bikes to school in the morning and I'll ride home and then I'll come get you in the afternoon.
Parent of the Year, Reggie Rizzo.
This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Let's head off to
Weird
Wednesday. We're going to start off this Weird Wednesday with good intentions. There was a park in England where animal rescuers were called to help a dog that was stuck in a ditch. Because if you see a dog stuck in a ditch, you want to help out, right, Marcus?
Absolutely do.
Well, several reports had come in that the dog was covered in so much mud and it was stuck and it needed help. The team there rushed out to help the dog, only to discover that it was, quote, a statue that had already been rescued by an on-site member of staff, end quote. It was such a realistic statue and it was down in the mud. People thought it was a dog that was just stuck and they were calling in. However, the Cleethorpes Wildlife Rescue did praise their team for their quick response as they arrived in less than 20 minutes after calls had been made. So again, good intentions, but to rescue a stone dog.
Yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, I would probably have made the call as well if there were any doubt that this were a real dog. But yeah, kind of humorous once you come to realize, oh, just a statue. It does make me wonder, though, how did that thing get down there? Was somebody just sick of this statue and decided, hey, I'll toss it in the ditch. No one will ever think to look here.
Heading off to New Zealand now, as February 29th caused some issues there. It led some residents unable to fill up their tank. Multiple gas stations across New Zealand had pumps that weren't working because they weren't programmed to recognize Leap Day or February 29th as a valid date.
That's some Y2K stuff right here.
That was my first thought too. A very low-key Y2K stuff here, but
if they'd had an electric school bus, they'd still be driving smoothly.
So if the customers there tried to pay at the pump and they had unattended gas stations, the machine just wouldn't accept their cards. If there happened to be an employee working at the station, they could go in and pay inside. John Scott, the chief executive of Invenco, which has pumps all over the world, said only New Zealand was affected by this glitch. Quote, we clearly know about leap years. We've been dealing with them for the last 20 to 30 years, end quote, which I think leap years have been around quite a bit longer than that, but I'm going to let that one slide. So what caused the issue? What made it so they couldn't recognize this date? There was a software update during the early days of COVID, and it was just never recognized or fixed from that point on. He added that everything was back to normal by the night on the 29th. So it wasn't a full day of the pumps being down, just most of the day.
Okay, a few things. Was this software update only to the pumps in New Zealand and none of their other pumps around the world?
It seems to be the case, yes.
That seems bizarre in its own right. Also, my guess is that the last 20 to 30 years, maybe the company's only that old. I don't know. That's going to be my speculation there.
It's a good, valid point. You're right. That may be the case. Here, I was insulting the guy for thinking leap years only lasted. But okay, I'll give you that.
And lastly, they could still go in and pay for their gas with an attendant.
Correct, but not all the stations there have attendants. Some of them are just you know, cards and, yeah, just automated gas stations.
Okay. So in the U.S., I'm accustomed to seeing unattended pumps. Of course, you go and you pump your own gas. It's not the 1950s anymore. But I would always anticipate someone, an employee of some sort, is on the premises to sell me a snack or a soda or to ring me up manually if need be for gasoline. So that's an interesting twist there, because my first thought after hearing that was, well, that's kind of a first world problem. If you can still just go inside, pay for the gas and be done with it. Yeah, unfortunate that you can't use your card at the pump. But, you know, in certain instances, if there wasn't an attendant, I can see where that would have caused some issues, certainly.
For the next Weird Wednesday story, I'm going to lead off with this by saying that if I'm ever going to commit a crime and get arrested, I want it to be a big one. You know, something that's actually worth committing a crime for.
Man,
well, I just wanted to point that out there. I'm not going to go to jail for petty crimes.
A little scared of you now.
Clearly not everyone feels the same as me.
What kind of crime are we talking here? Because,
well, arrest warrants have been issued for two people in North Carolina for a poaching case involving Venus flytraps. Again, not something I'd want to go to jail for.
I did not know you could poach plants.
Well, they do grow naturally in the eastern part of North Carolina. However, these two people are accused of stealing 600 of the plants from a conservation land in Bowling Springs. So they're stealing them from a conservation area. That's where the poaching comes in.
Okay, fair enough.
Sergeant Matt Crisco with the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission told WECT-TV, quote, "They only grow naturally within a 100-mile radius of Wilmington. This time of year, they start to bud flowers," end quote. He said those flowers make it easier for them to find, which leads to increased patrols for poachers. So this is a pretty common thing, or at least common enough that they increase their patrols.
Interesting.
So to add to this Venus flytrap story, it's not like it's impossible to get Venus flytraps. My son recently received some seeds for them this Christmas. The problem is it takes like 3 to 5 years for them to become fully grown and actually be able to catch flies. What makes me upset is I finally got it where the seeds were starting to come up. You started to see the little buds of the plants when my son knocked it over and killed all of the plants. So I don't even have to wait the 3 to 5 years. They're just in the trash.
How did they die just because it tipped over?
They all became loose from the soil. I had trouble getting the roots to take again after they fell out of the soil because he knocked over the pot and stuff. So it messed him up. He didn't do it on purpose, but let's just say this tends to happen a lot.
No, that's frustrating when you're talking about that time frame, 3 to 5 years. I had no idea. I'd never stopped to even think about where do Venus flytraps actually grow in the wild. You know, it's one of those things you see in cartoons mainly or TV shows. And I guess I just never really even gave it another thought.
It seems like a jungle plant to me. It doesn't seem like North Carolina.
Does. Wilmington? Yeah, that would not have been atop my list of guesses. I'll say that.
Yeah, I kind of want to see these flytrap fields. If there were 600 of them to grab, there must be a decent amount around there. I want to go and see this now.
Do these flytraps care to feast on mosquitoes as well? Because if so, that would be great to keep a few of those around in the summer evenings.
Any bug that can kind of initiate the closing and fits in their mouth, they'll do. I've seen them do it to wasps and stuff. So yeah.
Wow. All right. Yeah, maybe worth keeping a few of those around if you've got a backyard with a lot of bugs in it.
Just don't poach them. Now let's go to Wisconsin for some big news about Big Macs. A Fond du Lac resident, Donald Gorski, age 70, continues to hold the Guinness World Record for the most Big Macs eaten in a lifetime. He is now at 34,128. And how do we know this, Marcus? Do you want to take a guess?
I mean, he counted? I don't know what.
He has saved the receipt and package from everyone he has eaten since March 17th, 1972, when he had his very first one.
Insane. Insane. 34,000? First of all, kudos to you for reaching the age of 70, Donald.
Well, he told Guinness World Record after he had his first one, "In that moment, I said, I'm probably going to eat these the rest of my life. I threw the cartons in the back seat and started counting them from day one," end quote. In 2023, he ate 728, and if you do the math, that's 2 per day. Gorski has actually held this record since 1999, when he used to eat up to 9 Big Macs a day.
What?
Yeah, now he usually stops at that, too.
All right, I'll reiterate. Kudos to you for being alive, Donald. 9 Big Macs a day? If I did that once, it might be enough to kill me.
He said, quote, "People who have watched me eating a Big Mac often comment that I look like I'm eating one for the very first time," end quote. He did say he tried a Whopper in 1984, but it wasn't the same, saying, "When I like something, I stick with it all the time." He added, many people thought I'd be dead by now, but instead I've been a record holder for my 24th year, one of Guinness World Records' longest running record holders. So that's pretty cool to me, end quote. He said that he maintains his physique, in case you're wondering, Marcus, by not eating any fries. He just eats the burgers.
Oh, well, thank God. What kind of physique would that be, Reggie?
The Big Mac physique.
There's a lot of different physiques out there. So maintaining a physique doesn't imply that you are in shape. Wow, that's tough. What I would love to ask old Donald here is, do you ever just buy burgers at the grocery store, throw them on the grill, and enjoy those?
Those are so much better. So much better. A fresh burger on the grill.
Yeah, you don't walk away with an immediate stomach ache and a mind full of regret.
I get that feeling just from one Big Mac. And you know what? I don't know if I've eaten 9 in a year ever in my entire life. Like, I don't think I've eaten 2 in the past like 5 or 10 years.
No.
So this guy's clearly way ahead of me. I don't think I'm ever catching up to him.
No, definitely not. Same here. And even when I was younger and did frequent McDonald's restaurants, I was more of a double quarter pounder kind of guy.
I was more of a regular hamburger guy because it was cheap.
Fair enough. But then didn't you just end up buying like 3 or 4 of them?
I'd usually get two hamburgers, small fry, a drink. I don't need a lot. I'm a simple man.
It was high school. It wasn't always my money I was spending.
I tended to be more of a Taco Bell guy because those tacos when I was in high school were so cheap. You could get a bunch of them for like a buck or two. And now I could fill them up. Now it costs several bucks just to even get a plain taco. So
I still think that's easily the best priced fast food restaurant out there. I mean, they've got their demo and yeah, it's another cost, but hey, we haven't been, there's been a lot of inflation since we were that age, Reggie.
And let's just say I'm willing to now spend a little extra money to go to a restaurant.
Oh, you are? Are you?
Good food. Yeah, I want good food now. I don't usually go for the fast food. I'm to the age now where I'm willing to accept I'm going to pay a little more for good food.
Arby's.
That's right. get my Arby's. You got us. I stepped it up a notch. All right, we're going to close out Weird Wednesday with one more Guinness World Record as a Welshman broke the record for the most rabbits on his body. Chris Evans now has 69 different tattoos of rabbits on his body. He got his first one in 2009 and now has them all over his arms, legs, and chest. Evans told Guinness World Record, I love the aesthetic of a rabbit. They're such cute creatures. And the juxtaposition of getting something so cute as a tattoo, which is usually renowned for being a tough person's thing, is something I really like, end quote. Now, he said he's unable to have a real rabbit, saying, quote, unfortunately, I don't have any pet rabbits, as I have a terrier called Birdie. I don't think that would be a good pairing, but I love him very much. End quote. In fact, Birdie is his only non-rabbit tattoo, but even that tattoo has the dog wearing a bunny bandana to, quote, keep the theme running.
Okay. I mean, you like something, you stick with it. There's
a reason I don't have any tattoos on my body. I don't like anything enough to get it tattooed and be permanently on me.
Yeah, I hear you. That's a commitment. I mean, Craig has really gone all in with the commitment here. If you've got 69 rabbit tattoos. And at this point, with that many tattoos, I doubt anybody even wants to approach him to start a conversation and ask, hey, why the rabbit tattoos? Because usually somebody who's that tatted up is a little intimidating.
I hope he has a nickname like Bugs or something like that, you know, for Bugs Bunny. Or he has at least a fun nickname surrounding it.
So what are you saying? Roger and Buster were not available? I think Buster Bunny wasn't that like Bugs' nephew or something?
Yeah, something like that. Whatever. Just call him anything. Call him Looney Tunes for all I care. But I hope he has a good nickname. Looney Tunes
right,
works
Craig,
on many levels.
Reggie has appointed you Bugs and or Looney Tunes. So hope you love those nicknames.
Let's hop into this day in history. It was March 6, 1945, that George Neeson received the patent for the very first modern trampoline. It all started in 1930 when then 16-year-old Neeson attended the circus in his hometown of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He watched as the aerialists dropped from their high perches onto the safety net below with a soft bounce. As a gymnast, he found the whole process fascinating. After that visit, he worked on several ways to replicate the idea. He would stretch canvas along wood beams in hopes that it would allow him to bounce. In fact, his own dad would be confused as he would take apart his bed and use the frame to help him build his idea. It wasn't until 1934, when he was in college, that he created the first viable prototype with his gymnastics coach. Even after college, the duo continued to work on it, but his coach ended up leaving the business that they had created for this to focus on his career in acrobatics, diving, and entertainment. So it took Neeson 15 years and several failed attempts until he finally found success. He named his invention Tumbling Device and was granted the patent. He did later rename it the trampoline when he received a registered trademark. He got the name from El Trampoline, which means diving board in Spanish. His daughter Deanne later recounted her father's ambition, quote, "My father knew he was onto something. He took it to a YMCA camp and tried it out, and the kids loved it. They wouldn't even get off it to go to the pool." She added, "Dad was very proud of his invention and what it led to. He loved it and couldn't walk away from it. I know he'd be so happy to see so many people using the trampoline today," end quote. Now, like lots of inventors, he ended up with a lot of patents in his lifetime, 44 to be exact. However, most of them did have to do with the trampoline. He would also end up creating the gymnastic sport of trampolining, which became an Olympic event in the 2000 Games in Sydney, and his daughter is also a national trampoline champion, which, by the way, he did live long enough to see it become an Olympic sport. During World War II, trampolines were used as training for pilots so they could learn how to reorient themselves after doing difficult maneuvers. That led to him meeting Scott Carpenter, who later became a Mercury 7 astronaut. They worked together to have the trampoline as part of the space training program, and with NASA, they created a game called Spaceball. The description from the Smithsonian says Spaceball is where two people would face off on a three-sided trampoline with a frame in the middle featuring a hole. While bouncing to and fro, one competitor would throw the ball through the hole and the other would have to try to stop it to save a point. Needless to say, trampoline's still a success today, and I guess it was worth taking apart his bed as a youth to come up with this idea.
Well, clearly it benefited not only him, but his family to have invented something that became, I guess you'd say, a pretty big part of society. I myself never been a big trampoliner, if that's the appropriate way of saying that. I think I had a small exercise one as a kid that maybe my parents bought for whatever reason. Never had one of the big ones in my backyard. I have done that on a handful of occasions at friends' houses, but I have to admit, Reg, even as a kid, when I'm soaring 10 feet in the air, I'm going, I hope I don't crash upon landing and yeah, break every bone in my body.
Well, you know, now there's entire complexes dedicated to trampolines where you jump around. You know, they have them all over the place. You wear your socks, your special socks, you jump around in the trampoline. So it's become, obviously, it's a staple for childhood. Now, my wife being an attorney also fears the same thing as you and refuses to let our kids get a trampoline because she knows of the injuries that can occur.
There are a lot. And I understand the excitement from kids being able to go do that, much like getting in a bounce house and plopping around in there for a while. But yeah, I don't know. The potential for injury outweighed any enjoyment that I got out of that, even as a kid. So if I'm thinking that way as a child, you know, now as an adult, there's no way I'm getting back on that.
Still made millions of dollars for him and his family.
Yeah, hey, it worked out real well for Mr. Neeson there.
Thanks for joining us on another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. You can connect with us by email using coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. Also, like and leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I'm Reggie Rizzou. He's Marcus Path. We'll be back with more cool stuff tomorrow.